Today is February 11, 1985. My name is Tika Ward. I'm interviewing Ethel Schwartz. We are at 3022 Vogue Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. Our topic is Lou Tate and the Little Loom House. As we begin, Ethel, currently you serve as the treasurer of the Lou Tate Foundation, Incorporated. How long have you served in that position?
Well, corporation, I believe, is 5 years, and I've been there 4 years, and I just keep taking the job.
You were on the founding board of directors.
Not the beginning, not the first year. I just came as a member of the Lou Tate Foundation.
You weren't on the founding board?
No.
I wonder why you weren't.
Well, I think when they first met at the university, not too many people knew me, and I noticed the people that were selected were those who knew one another. So and for a whole year, I just felt I wanted to know what was going on. And the first time they had a meeting at Masterson's with Hartford, was that her name? Anyway, I went to that meeting. It was the one and only time my husband came with me, but I went to that meeting, and I was really impressed with what the board was doing. Then Vivian called me and asked me if I would like to be on the board, and I said yes. It didn't take much persuading, so at Ann Kuiper's house, that was the first meeting, they asked me if I would accept the job of treasurer. And ever since that, I've been treasurer of the Little Loom House.
Tell me when you first went to the Little Loom House.
Well, that's been a good many years ago. Susan was 11 years old at the time. And someone had mentioned the Little Loom House. So I found my way there with Susan. And it had a beautiful setting. I really loved the outdoors. So I loved the atmosphere there. But I left Susan and I went home and didn't pick her up until late in the afternoon. So for 25 cents, then I'd take her there every weekend, and for 25 cents, you could leave her there for practically the whole day. And I believe I did make a mistake by not staying. I really should have learned to weave. You know what, I feel now that I should have. But at the time, I was busy with other activities. Then I was very much active with the Girl Scouts. So I would bring girls up there who were in my troop. And they would they would weave. You know, it would be just one day, would be one, especially usually a Sunday. And Lou Tate would call me on the phone to ask me to do certain things for her, and she knew my husband was on the faculty and she was being harassed by people in the neighborhood. They'd find boxes around and they'd call and they'd send, I don't know if it was a city, but they would send people there to clean up the place. One thing I remembered was that she would have us throw boxes into the gully to keep the water from moving, to stop the erosion. You didn't know that. And she was, of course, quite upset by this harassment, but I don't know how she stopped it. I have no idea. Another thing, she'd call Susan and I up to go down and sit for when there'd be a display or at Stewart's. We'd sit in the store and Susan would weave, you know, and I'd pretend to weave. But she'd called Susan. Of course, Susan was quite young then, and I would have to drive her. And I enjoyed talking to people and selling the idea of a Little Loom House.
Susan tells even her brother helping in a way with a table to hold the loom.
Oh, well, we took a loom at home, And he took an old kitchen table that's down in the basement. He punched holes in it and put strings through it, and then she could work her feet, work two harness looms. Now, Susan was very good with the loom. She's very good with her hands, so she took to it quite easily. Another thing that Lou Tate taught her was how to read the drafts. That was something Lou Tate wanted the younger children to learn. So Susan did spend a lot of time reading those drafts and trying to transpose them onto paper that she would have to color afterward. Another thing I remember about Lou Tate was that she'd call us and we'd have to stuff her walls with envelopes, which would, I guess she wanted it for insulation. So, but it was funny, and we had to put special sizes, certain sizes, in certain walls. It was really funny. And then after Lou Tate had died, there weren't any envelopes in the walls. Somebody must have pulled them out, you know. But anyway, that's what we would come and do some of the days. Of course, this was in later years when Lou Tate was ill.
When you first went down there.
Well, I don't quite remember. I remember I used to bring a dog. We had a dog, and Lou Tate loved dogs, and the dog would run, just have the whole run of the place. And I remember Lou Tate had a dog, and she used to teach that dog ice cream. I mean, give the dog ice cream. It was funny. It was really funny, a whole ice cream cone. Another thing I remember, I used to take Lou Tate to the library, or go and pick up books for her, or else take a driver to the bank or something.
Was she not driving at that time, or?
Well, she didn't have, I don't think she had a car. I remember she had a funny car, which was a station wagon, and it was a wooden, I think there's some pictures of it in some of her writings. So a wooden car, wooden station wagon, it had wooden sides to it. But I guess after a while, it just stopped running. She used to travel, from what I've heard, she used to travel all over the hills in that car.
What were your first impressions of her when you first would be dropping Susan off there?
Well, she talked a lot. She talked a lot. You know what I mean? She was quite verbal. She had had a lot to say, and I'll tell you, I admire her knowledge of weaving and of history. I think it was because of her history degree that she became interested in weaving. And but she was very, very knowledgeable. I don't think I've ever met anyone who knew as much about weaving.
Did she have an accent to her voice or anything that you remember about it?
No. I mean, when she'd call you on the telephone, she had you on. She'd talk a long time. Of course, she'd repeat what she had to say. She'd repeat it over and over and over again. But she'd call here quite often. Of course, she wanted Susan to do this and Susan to do that, do things for her. And we were quite receptive. We were willing, because we both dearly loved that place.
Did she have a telephone in Bottom House and in
Top
House?
No. She only had it in the Bottom House. At first, we were afraid to call her, you know. The telephone in the Top House, in fact, it was, there were four rooms. I don't know if anyone described it to you, but there were about four rooms, and you could hardly move in the Loom House. You know, they had the shelves with all the looms on it, a big pot belly stove over to one side. I'd never been there when that stove was lit, because she never, she wasn't there in the winter time. She didn't have the place open in the winter time. And boxes all over the shelves, on the floor. But she did have a refrigerator there, and sometimes I'd bring her, you know, some food from home, something that I just took out of the freezer, and I'd bring her. And that refrigerator had TV dinners. That's what I believe she lived on, TV dinners. It was really funny. Another thing I remembered about her, booties. She always wore booties. And so if we wanted to give her something, we would buy her booties. That's what she walked around in. And if you ever, were ever in her house, in the, well, called Esta, but at that time I don't know if it is that name. You couldn't walk through from the doorway. I think I was in there once or twice. You couldn't walk from the kitchen through the room. It was just cluttered with paper. Just paper piled up high. And then later it was boxes of coverlets. So I don't know where she slept. I mean, there was a bed there, but I was surprised that the place hadn't gotten on fire.
Did you ever get to meet any of her family?
No, never. Never. I don't know any family.
And you wouldn't see her in the wintertime?
No, because she wasn't opened in the wintertime. I mean, she may have had people come in, you know, into her house, but we would always go to the tap house. You see, it's on very rare occasions. And she had, it was only open at certain hours and on certain days, so you're just, you know, you weren't free to go just any time.
Did you also go to any of the open houses?
Yes, the open houses I went to, but I never stayed for her parties. She would always, she had parties occasionally, and she'd tell us to stay. I just didn't know how to take it. There were things that I didn't understand about her. When she'd send us the note, it was always on the back. She'd write it in handwriting, but the note would have a lot of typewritten, and I didn't know what, I couldn't understand what her notes were all about. But her handwritten note would be, of course, some instruction or something she would like us to do. I never knew that she was sending out lessons or sending out information about weaving. So not until, you know, we began cleaning up the loom house did I realize that these were papers that she sent all over the country. So,
did things start to fall in place for you more as your role after Lou Tate's death?
Oh, yes,
expanded?
definitely. I just felt at the time, even though I didn't understand some of the things she was doing, I just felt at the time that she needed us. She needed some help. When she was in the house, when she was at a nursing home, she called us, and Susan and I went and picked up some stuff at the loom house and took it to the nursing home, and then we showed the patients there how to do how to card some of the wool and how, you know, how to weave a little bit. You know, it really was remarkable that she had a great interest in other people,
even when she was in the nursing home,
even when she was in sick, you see. And then we were out of town when she passed away, so I never did get to you know, I think there was a memorial for her. So we didn't have any information on that.
So she,
but she really, she was a remarkable woman, remarkable. You know, but I guess this harassment that she had she didn't make her a very happy person.
The harassment in terms of neighbors not wanting her there. How do you define the harassment?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it was the neighbors next door, because she did have a lot of friends. But it may have been real estate people who wanted her, you know, I don't know, that's what I thought might be. They wanted the land, and they wanted her to, you know, leave it and sell it, and they can put up probably very expensive homes. Because it's, what is it, a half an acre of land. But I don't understand all the facts, or I didn't know all the facts before about Lou Tate.
We have a picture of Susan here, and it's with the Oral History Project, but do you want to tell us?
Well, Susan's a young lady who's warping, and Karen, the girl who's sitting on the ride, it was a very good weaver, Karen Leifer, and she has since passed away. The girl on the left is a friend of Paz's. She's a friend of ours, Susan's age, Paz's. And the girl on the right is her sister. they're not weavers, but I've shown them this picture and they got a kick out of it. But Susan's taking some weaving lessons in New York. She doesn't have a loom, but she still has an interest in it.
Now on the back of this, is this a sample of the kind of thing that you would get in the mail from her?
No, this is a letter that she wrote to me. But the stuff I would get was on things to do with weaving. Now this is what she did send to me. I guess she would use up the paper instead of putting it on a blank sheet. She would use up the paper. Okay. Oh, well, this I don't know about. I think this is her grandpappy.
And no, she would send those out to people, too.
Well, she may have. I don't remember ever receiving anything like this, because I think I've kept everything she sent us. And all the newspaper clippings about the loom house, I have. I keep everything.
Now there's another photograph. It's in the newspaper.
This came out of the newspaper. And this is Susan and Sue Kendricks. Susan, I believe, knew a lot more of the people who came out because she spent, you know, that time. And she was younger, and they were always interested in younger people. So this is fine.
The kinds of things that you're doing now is helping to organize and retrieve all of these papers that she left.
That's true.
That are in the boxes that kept.
No, well, what we'd like to do is put them together and make them into get all the pages and make them into book form and make it into a book. And sell them so that it would help keep the loom house going. It's one of our resources, getting money.
When you were going there, you didn't know that she was sending out, in addition to this, the publications. Did you ever see any of those lying
around? Well, she would send one. You know, if she would send you a, she would put it into an envelope and she would mail it to you. Now, once in a while, she'd give Susan something like that.
For instance, weaving at the Little Loom House.
Now she may have given Susan a copy of that. You see, but most of her stuff were single pages. And that's what we're trying to put together.
You go out there certainly at least once a week.
Once a week and sometimes twice a week.
When you started out being the treasurer, did you just see yourself as being the treasurer? Tell me how your increased activity evolved.
Well, since there aren't too many volunteers, I decided I would volunteer other than just keep books or keep the finances going. So I would go and I would try to, I would work with Vivian, and we were trying to get the pages together because she really, they were scattered all over the, they were in the shed, they were in the her garage, they were up at the top house, they were up in the attic, in the wisteria, in the Esta. They were scattered all over, and they were already wrapped in the like bundles that come from the printers. They were never opened. So we would sit out in outside of the garage, in the shade, sorting papers. And then Sue Kendricks would come. But Vivian was the one who really organized it. Well, then, of course, when it got colder, we couldn't do that anymore. So we would, so then I would volunteer for some other jobs. I would always try to be at open house. And I was really the one that pushed to leave Lynch's office and make the top house an office.
Oh, now tell about that. What do you mean, leave Lynch's office?
Well, we were paying the attorney for the use of the phone to have the name of the loom house in the telephone, and then all our mail would come there. And
so after Lou Tate died, they took the phone she had out of Bottom House, and they changed the mailing address to the lawyers.
To the lawyers, yes. Well, that had to be done because we were becoming a foundation, so we needed the lawyers. And then Anne Kuiper got Pat Bless to live in the house so that we would have a custodian.
Now, was this partly, since you were the treasurer, you began to be aware of how the what monies the foundation did have were being spent?
Yes.
And so that was kind of your initial reason for realizing.
Well, we were playing, we would have to go to a commercial phone, you see, because before we had a private phone or a family phone. So in order to get a commercial phone and to be listed as a school, or not so much as a school, but so that people could find us in the telephone book, and the expense was very high, we had to make a choice of having the office downtown or moving it out to the Loom House. And then we began to get donations from different people, got a file cabinet, and so that the expense of having the office downtown took care of the phone at the Top House.
You mean you, basically, what it cost you to have the telephone there was as much as...
As it would it cost us to have the office downtown.
Tell me about, but was this before the Top House was renovated?
No, this was after. This was afterward. This was after renovation. So, but it was a move. I guess it was a little more prestigious to be downtown, have an address downtown. But we didn't get the mail. You know, first it would go through Mr. Fowler, and then he would have to post it and mail it to us. This way the mail is sent directly to us.
You started going out, though, to the Loom House on a regular basis.
Well, because I felt that the Loom House should be open to the public. Since we have a telephone and we're paying for it, and I feel we should be open more frequently. But it's very hard to get volunteers to come out. So we were open 2 days a week for a year. And now we're a little, maybe we can, if we get more volunteers, we can be open at least 3 times a week. Because people are interested, and I've heard cases where people have come out, and all they can see, of course, is what they see through the windows. So we need to be open more often.
What is on your current list of things you wish could be achieved for the Loom House?
Well, I'd like to see those pages all put together. Then we could offer them to the public or to those who are interested in weaving. There's a lot of information on those pages.
What kinds of things are on some of those pages?
Well, on how to weave, how to go through, make certain patterns. It's very thorough.
Some of the pages are drafts?
Some of them are drafts, yes. We also have original drafts. We have a lot of drafts. We have a lot of coverlets. Lou Tate had an interest in collecting coverlets and then trying to figure out the drafts, to figure out the patterns. That's one of the things that she taught Susan.
Do you think your daughter's mathematical bent enabled her to be able to do so well on that kind
of thing? Well, it may have, might have. She sent me an article where she said she found that you can also do patterns on a computer. So you can work out things on a computer.
So rescuing these pages, putting them into some kind of publishable form, is one of the goals you have.
Yes, it is. And also to try to make a museum out of a lot of the old weaving, I don't know what you call them, whether frames or pieces that people have donated, people who have known Lou Tate, who worked with her. And we have some of them are really valuable. Some of them are worth a lot of money. And we have little miniature looms. So we hope to make out some kind of a museum.
a place to house those things as well.
Yeah, and then the coverlets, I know, I don't know how many coverlets we own. It's a big struggle.
It's a constant struggle. For instance, even in the house that's been renovated, if you don't keep on top of it.
Oh, things can happen. Yeah, there's a tree that's growing there. Someone coming down the road came up to the tap house and said, you know, there's a tree that's slanted. It's a very big, heavy tree. He said, someday that's going to go through the roof if you don't take care of it. It's in the back of the, it's in the back of the tap house.
We no longer have a caretaker out there, do we?
No, no.
Do you think we need to have one? Do you think it would help?
I don't think so. In the first place, this caretaker didn't do anything for us. It was a struggle to get him to do anything for us. And we do save on electricity, because in the wintertime, just putting on a heater was a great expense. Just one heater, and our bill would go sky high. So we don't need a caretaker. At least I don't feel we do. All we do is need to have that building, those two buildings, renovated. And that's really our biggest goal. But it's hard to get money.
What is going on with the issue concerning the survey, concerning the property lines? That seems to be ongoing.
Well, I sent a check to the lawyer, Kyler. What is it? Willock. I sent her some money, and she was supposed to file, something in the courthouse, and we haven't heard.
But there's still, this is another form of harassment in a way, don't you think?
Well, I think so, because we want to make a decision on our property line, and then put that behind us so we can go on to the next step. But that's got to be settled one way or the other. See, one of our big problems is the road, too, where the road, you know, there's a lot of erosion. Even though they had put fixed the road in the back, you know, a lot of money was spent on that. I don't know, over $100,000, a wall, because the water would rush down and wash the soil away. We still have a little bit of that. But it's not as great. So
you mean the road that we have going up there now?
Yeah,
could potentially.
The road going up, and of course, there's another thing with our neighbors. There was a walk that led you up to Possum Path, where you didn't have to go all the way around to get to the Loom House, and that's no longer there because the people have put their deck there. So that's another thing that we have to settle.
When did they put that deck there?
Well, it's been there quite a while.
Was Lou Tate alive?
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember.
I wonder.
You see, it's so
didn't...
wooded that I didn't ever pay any attention to him. You know, in the summertime, it's wooded and you can't see it as much. Now it's much more noticeable.
As you look back and you think about Lou Tate, what do you remember anything about her in particular, beside talking a lot?
No, she loved little children. She just loved them. She talked to them differently than she would speak to adults. You know, there was just something about little children that she reacted to. Another thing I noticed, she always geared things to the younger children. She would teach the little ones, I guess that was part of her philosophy, teach the little ones, and then the little ones would teach the others. But it used to be wonderful when she'd have open house, lots of people would come. We'd have, she also would have a tie-dye. You'd bring an old shirt or something, and she'd have someone there lecturing. And there's a place where they could build a fire, and there were different buckets with different colored dye, and we would have tie-dye parties. It was really fun. But really, to tell you the truth, I would take Susan and then I'd go home and then come back for her. So, but the children were just wonderful. All right. One of the ways Lou Tate would help with her finances is charging 25 cents for all the all day, and then measure the number, the inches of your weaving. But we didn't always get that weaving unless we went up there a week or two later, where she would cut them off. But she did put your name on and a pin. And to this day, I still find bits of weaving that have the names of different children.
This is the beginning of Side 2, interview with Ethel Schwartz about Lou Tate and the Little Loom House.
Well, in going through the attics, both in Wisteria and Top House, no, not Wisteria, Esta, I found a lot of envelopes with stamps on it that were addressed, that were never mailed out. And I assume that these envelopes were to take care of some of the pages that she sent around the country. So it was really, although the envelopes that I put into the wall were not addressed, they were just blank pages with, just the blank ones that had Little Loom House address on it. Another thing I found, that Lou Tate was very good at keeping records, particularly about the different patterns. She would have her pieces of weaving, and then they would be attached to the pages that she would send out. And then there's some black books that have the entire pages that she kept with the with samples of different patterns. She kept magazines that had weaving, that had color in them, that she collected, or companies sent her from all over the world. She never threw anything out. She kept, she also saved stamps, which I've discovered, but they're in very bad condition. These are cancel stamps. Then she would buy hundreds of stamps for her mailing, but I found they were stuck together, so I've tried to separate them. They're not really of any value today, but I tried to use them in when I'm sending out my bills or my payments. I would try to unglue them. So it was funny. Well, last week the temperature had dropped to 16 below zero, and we thought we had turned the pipes off in the Top House. When Alice and I got to the Loom House on Tuesday, the bathroom was flooded, and we didn't know how to stop the water. It seemed like there was a break in the wall. Finally got Bob Douglas to give us the name of a plumber, who incidentally was a former student of Lou Tate's, and he sent someone to turn the pipes off, or to turn the water off. When we went over to the to Esta, we found that the one of the windows was broken, and the storm window was pushed and broken, and now the roof is leaking. So we're having a problem on how to stop the leak. Every time it rains, we worry about what will happen to the Lou Mouse.
You had said earlier that you thought Lou Tate had a plan. I suppose that when you see the day-to-day operational problems that she must have faced, worrying about plumbing or about leaks, and she was also trying to do the weaving, and then she was worried about harassment, the fact that you thought she had a plan must make it seem...
Well, I knew she wanted to make this into a museum, and she wanted it to be kept for future weavers. Otherwise, she wouldn't have put it in her will that this was to be left to the government if we didn't want to carry on as volunteers. So that was one of her plans, to keep weaving going in the schools. She wanted the blind, the school children, Girl Scouts, to come up and be able to use the Loom House. And I think one of the reasons why she charged so little, she wanted to encourage weaving. Because when you go to a go for lessons today, they're a lot more expensive than what we would charge. And we want to keep this thing going. We want children to learn about cloth making, how the pioneers came across country with drafts and their coverlets. So that's why we're trying to carry on. Lou Tate said, well, we can call it her dream.